warning, what you're about to hear may cause uncontrollable sadness of the heart, running of makeup, and spontaneous ugly crying. Attempting to keep a put-together appearance may be complicated. If confronted by someone in public about these symptoms, the Root Note simply recommends you share this episode with them. For those about to listen, Godspeed. We'll all get through this together.
The following has been produced by PutThemInASong.com.
My name is Shane Yoder. I write songs for a living. And every day, I hear stories transform into songs. Now you can too. Welcome back to The Root Note. Sometimes in life, we encounter people that we can't really put into words. You just tell their stories and say, well, you should have been there. And in my case, I get to write a song about them. The local county paper even put this song on their Facebook page. And it surely isn't because I'm a big deal. It's because of the impact this man had on the community. This is episode 7 of The Root Note. Better View.
He's probably really excited for us all to join him to show us all the big deers he shot and all their, what are they called, points? All their big horns.
Their antlers.
What do you call them, though? Don't you call them, like, 7-point deers or something?
Sure.
Ignore all this. Don't use any of it.
Call is now being recorded.
I think what I admired most was his ability to speak to anybody, feeling very comfortable speaking in public. And I was shy. I was just on the other end of the spectrum, and so I admire that. I admired that in him.
What comes to my mind is his ability to connect with all gamuts of people.
Grandpa loves to tell stories. He's a hugger. I could tell that he's friends with everybody. He's never met a stranger before. He loves his grandkids. He loved the boys a lot. He always was eager to tell me a new Shane story every time I saw him.
Well, you know, we went to school together through the middle school years. It was just a small private school, but I knew him when I saw him, but I, you know, didn't really pay any attention to him. Then in 9th and 10th grade, when our teacher was very interested in sciences and interested in the constellation and stars and teaching them to us, and he had a telescope, so one day after school, he said, well, he had planned this before the day was over, of course, and he said, we're going to have a hot dog roast up on Mount Davis. And then after the stars appear, we're going to look at them through the telescope. And so we were around the campfire, and I don't know what happened. An amber or a spark hit my skirt, and it was in the days when all the girls wore skirts to school.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
It started my skirt on fire. There was flame out of... almost 6 inches high, you know, it started so quickly. And I guess Orrin just happened to be standing there, and he quickly just grabs the corner of my skirt and the folds and squeezed it together with his hand and put it out. That was the first time I really paid any attention to him.
I guess you did.
When I was at home, there were always a steady stream of people coming to our house to chat, to visit, to talk. I got to learn to know a lot of people that way.
I didn't have grandparents very far into my life, so I'd only known him for a couple years, and, you know, he felt like he was my grandpa, too.
I wouldn't say he was a troublemaker. He more like lived on the edge. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, he was like that when he grew up, too, I could
yeah,
see.
Exactly. He wasn't the one to get people in trouble, but he wanted to have a good time.
The cows, I mean, you know, his precious cows, his cargo. I always had to stay home and milk them because I could produce milk out of those cows probably more so than, you know, a hired hand. I heard him tell somebody that, that I was better than any hired hand, but yet I never got paid.
Of course not. You're family. You should.
I know.
You
should free labor. It was free labor.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I learned. I mean, I learned about cows whether I wanted to or not.
Did he ever take you hunting or try to?
Yes, he tried to, but honestly, I think he just wanted me to help move the deer so he'd get a chance at him. I never did, but he used to kid me about going with him.
Yeah. Well, I know that he always liked when somebody else was around when he was hunting,
yeah,
because he didn't like gutting his own deer.
He always tried to get somebody to do that.
Yeah, so it was anytime Grandpa shot a deer, it was, all right, who's going to have to gut it this time?
Yep, he was. And I guess you remember seeing all the hands go up at his funeral services when Brian asked how many people gutted a deer for him. The hands went up all over the place.
Well, I only rode with him once when he was driving, and we were driving down the Cabin Hill, which is, to me, probably one of the most terrifying roads I've ever ridden on before. But he was driving this road. I don't know how high up it is, but it's, if on one side, it's nothing but just drop down into like a ravine. And the whole time Grandpa was driving down this hill, he was looking at me, telling me stories. He never looked at the road once. So I was a little nervous, but he got us down and up pretty good. So I guess he is a good driver.
Would you say he was a safe driver?
Well, Shane, that depends what time of his life you we're speaking about. He used to be, but again, he drove on the edge too.
Yeah.
But the day came when he cared more to watch what's out there than he did where he was driving.
No. No. There were many times, I can tell you other times, he was like always looking everywhere around, you know, he was looking everywhere around, he was doing stuff while he was driving, he was either trying to tickle us, or he'd wear a mask when we were little, he would pass people on the wrong side of the road.
He'd wear a mask?
He was so embarrassing, he would try to embarrass us, and there was this pig mask. I don't know. I had it for some reason, and it was just like a flat paper one, but it had like a rubber band. And every time a car would come by, he would pull it down over his head. It was a pig, and he would laugh like crazy. And I mean, he could see out, I guess. I mean, there was holes there, but he'd do that kind of stuff. We had gone on a trip to see Ashley in West Virginia, in Beckley, and it was at night, and he was getting sleepy, and he thought he was going off an exit, and here it was just a road, and it came to a dead end at the top, and we almost went over the bank. I mean, we slid that car around like crazy. He says, well, I guess this wasn't the exit, was it?
How many times did Bob have to pull out his vehicle with the tractor?
I couldn't even tell you how many times.
So the first time I went hunting with Grandpa was actually the first and only time I've ever been hunting ever. It was the day after Thanksgiving, right after you and I got engaged. And Shane had gotten me up really early that morning, and we went out to, like, I guess, watch for deer in the woods. I don't know much
about. That's all we ended up doing, but we, you know, we had guns and...
Yeah, we had guns and we watched. We were doing hunting things. But later on in the afternoon, we met up with Shane's cousins and everybody, and that's when the famous drive down to the cabin for the first time with Grandpa happened. And when he found out I had been out in the woods all morning with Shane, he said, "Oh, don't make her go back out. Bring her up to my tree stand. We'll go up there." I mean, I've never been in a tree stand, so I don't have anything to compare it to, but I mean, I would imagine it's a pretty fancy one. You walk in and right to the left, there's a space heater and a fork. And the fork is for when Grandpa makes hot dogs over his space heater, and which seemed pretty awesome. And Grandpa's chatting my ear off, and he's telling me stories about the boys and hunting and all that. And I'm looking out the window on the left, and Shane's like perched up with his gun out the window watching for a deer. And I'm looking out the window on the left of Shane, so I'm right next to him, and I see what I think is a dog coming down the hill, and I say, oh, look, nobody shoot that dog. And this really quick, rapid conversation happens. And all of a sudden, I have a gun go off, like, right next to my ear unexpectedly. I can't hear anything. I'm kind of, like, shaking. And Shane's laughing, and Grandpa's, you know, giving him the good attaboy. And it turns out what I thought was a dog was a coyote coming down the hill. And Shane had called out to his grandfather. He had said,
Grandpa, we shoot coyotes around here, right? And he's like, yep.
Yep. And so that happened so quickly, and I didn't hear what had happened. So while I'm still looking at what I think is a dog, my fiance shoots and kills it, and I watch it tumble down the hill. So it's the first time I've ever seen an animal killed, and I think it's a dog. So I was a little traumatized, and I couldn't hear anything.
We would spend the night there, the night before opening day.
Did he ever talk about any of those things?
He loved it.
Yes, he did. He had a deep sense of satisfaction when he saw the grandsons, of course, it was mostly in family, enjoying the place and having a good time there. He really enjoyed that. Meant a lot to him.
Yeah, he definitely did his part in providing memories for everybody else too. He's not the type of person to, you know, repeat it, but he was definitely a goofball while he was down there and tried to make people laugh. And
I'm sure
I don't think he had
that.
To try too hard. He had that natural ability.
One of the times we were down there, he always had that recliner sitting right by that stove.
Yes.
That
yes.
wood
stove. And he always had his cup of coffee and, you know, his toothpick in his ear.
Yeah.
But he was sitting in that recliner. He had his coffee, and his coffee was in a styrofoam cup.
And
yeah.
He was telling a story or something, and, you know, he got into it and set his coffee down on the stove
without even thinking. And,
you know, 5 seconds later, the bottom of the cup melted out, and the coffee went all over the stove, and steam was flying up everywhere. And we all made fun of him for that, and we didn't let it go for a while.
That's yeah, sure. I'll bet you did. Now, I don't know if he ever told me that. I think I heard that from you guys.
I remember more of a threat, more like that sermon material. Like the threat of it was like, or he would say, you know, I never asked her if I could tell you this story, but
if you were in trouble, he's going to bring it up in a sermon and make an example of you.
Exactly. That's sir. I can do that in a sermon.
Well, the church was looking for a new pastor, and they actually, at that time, the members would each have a vote. They'd have a voice, and they would suggest the name of somebody in the congregation that they thought would have the gift of being a pastor and a leader, and his was the only name that came up.
Oh, yeah. They might have saw that he had a gift of putting out fires.
They knew that, but maybe in another sense that they did, yeah. That's a good analogy.
He always seemed to know when to chime in and when to stay back or when to present the humor.
Yes.
And you know, when to be wise.
He did. He seemed to have that ability of, and I really believe it was a gift that God gave him. And he gives us all gifts, but I think that was his. And
yeah. You know,
I think he enjoyed the pastoring more out of the pulpit, actually, than he did in the pulpit.
He really did have an impact in changing the community and extending the reach of the church in a way that I think wasn't done in this area before. You know, to the nitty-gritty people. Church was not a building. It was wherever he went, and he was always on the road. Oh. Grandma said, "Oh, I know now what he did all day."
I've tried to recall that about the stories that people said, and this will strike you funny, but a number of the ladies that worked in restaurants said he used to stop by for a piece of pie, but he said, "Don't tell my wife." I think there's three different ones that said that to me.
That's funny. I remember you would never, you know, because he had diabetes and
yes.
He wasn't allowed sugar, and you know, I remember that. That's funny. But even in that, you know, they came to his viewing to show respect for him. You know,
they did.
It just shows
his character and has never met a stranger.
That's true.
That's a perfect story for who he was.
I was really taken back, really. I felt like there was a sea of people there. It was like over probably 1,000 people at the funeral. I did not realize how much of a ministry he had, and that he really did reach out to people and touch lives.
Then we went the last night of the viewing, or the last viewing is the one we went to, and it was, I mean, full of people that night, and people just kept coming through.
The undertaker told me that there must have been 1,500 there. Nobody actually counted, but that's what he was thinking. We had the viewing Saturday evening, and then Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening. There were three.
I was really impressed with the number of men that came there and were crying, that were saying, you know, "I'm really going to miss him." And, I mean, I guess it was my dad, but I was impressed with the number of people that were really truly going to miss him and were devastated at his loss.
I can see probably how, you know, people, I wouldn't be surprised to hear that some of those people that were there maybe only had one or two conversations with the man, but he just made that impact on him and felt so important.
I was impressed, too, with the variety of people, you know, from bankers to commissioners to the other end of the of life, where they really didn't have a job, and where maybe the food was coming from the next day, that he was, he was a friend to all.
I don't know if intense is the right word. Powerful is probably just to see the impact of that Grandpa had on so many people. I had only known him for a couple years.
They finally told the people that we're going to have a break. And, you know, I still can't forget that. I felt kind of bad about that.
He is one of my favorite people that's ever walked this earth.
Well, Shane, I think he's singing. And I think he's at least beginning to enjoy all the musical instruments. You know, he was much for a cappella singing and all that. But you know, I have a feeling he's enjoying it now.
He's like people told me, you know, he's one of the great ones, pillars of the community, that they were like, they just don't make him like that anymore.
You know, Warren Bender was such a great person, not only to his 80-plus sons and daughters and grandchildren, but also to the community. I wrote this song after he passed, and this is how I will always remember him. This is a song called Better View.
It's opening day on private land. You got a propane heater in your deer stand. It's a beautiful morning and you're thanking God for a better view. You head to the cabin for a bite to eat and watch us tell stories about the deer we've seen. There's coffee in your cup and you're thanking God for a better view. So what do you see now that your country mile above the clouds? Are the deer out running or bedded in something? Is the cabin road washed out? I gotta ask, what would Grandpa do? 'Cause you always had the better view. Grandma tells me about what you paid for the 300 acres back in 58. Now the whole family has you to thank for a better view. We miss you standing in front of the church with all the wisdom you got from the good word. You saw the light so you lived your life with a better view. So what do you see now? Your country mile above the clouds. Should we be running or changing something? Is God smiling down? I gotta ask, what would Grandpa do? 'Cause you always had the better view. Did you see the lives you changed? They all came out to lay you in the ground. But I'm sure you knew, 'cause you always had the better view. So what do you see now that your country mile above the clouds? Bet it's opening day on private land. You got a propane heater in your deer stand. It's a beautiful morning and you're thanking God for a better view.
The Root Note has been brought to you by Put Them in a Song in collaboration with MBI Studios. All guests know they are being recorded and are willing to be. All music and songs are created and scored by PutThemInASong.com. You can follow the Root Note Podcast at Root Note Pod on Twitter. If you would like to have a song or music created for you or a loved one, visit PutThemInASong.com, where you have a better voice than you think. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Root Note.